points.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Home buying and selling came to a standstill during the recession. That economic downturn was partially precipitated by billions of dollars in bad mortgage loans. Home values plummeted, home sales ceased, buildings stopped, and finding a loan became nearly impossible. Ironically, interest rates at the time also plunged, but even with those unbelievable rates, those who could get a loan mostly resisted the opportunity while they waited for home prices to decline even further. They were thinking, why buy something today when I can get it for less tomorrow? Well, in recent months, we've reached a turning point. Home prices have begun to rise steadily. Home sales are also on the incline, while interest rates remain low. So, is now the time to buy? Is now the time to sell? And who's getting the better deal at the moment, buyers or sellers? We're going to spend the hour looking at the health of the housing market in the region with the senior economist at Wells Fargo, Mark Vittner. He tracks trends on the U.S. housing markets, commercial real estate, regional economies, and more for Wells, and writes for the monthly Economic Outlook Report and the weekly Economic and Financial Commentary. It's been a long time. Welcome back.
Good to be back with you.
We only saw you, and we saw you frequently, but we only saw you during the bad times, so it's good to see you when things are beginning to be ticking upward. Pat Riley is president and COO of Allen Tate Realtors. They are the top Carolinas-based real estate firm. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And Bill Saint is vice president of the Home Builders Association of Charlotte. He's also president and CEO of Classica Homes, which is one of the homes represented in Homerama, which opened over the weekend. Welcome back.
Glad to be here, Mike. Thank you.
Good to see you. Recently, it was announced that Charlotte home sales are up 25.9% in September, 22.2% in October, with prices rising 8.7% in September and 15.2% in October. But are they selling at that? Well, they are selling it. What am I trying to say? Those are home sales. Of course they're selling. To what do you attribute that?
Well, Mike, I would say you've got a great market right now for buyers or sellers. We're seeing buyers coming in across the board with the new home side that have been able to sell their home and in some cases even buying before they sell because they are so confident. Oftentimes, though, they're walking in saying, my home sold much quicker than I thought. Mm-hmm. What do I do? How quickly can I get in a home? That leads to an inventory problem, which there's just not enough new homes or resales out there on an inventory basis.
You know, consumer confidence, I think, fell in October because of the situation in Washington. So why are people so optimistic that they will buy a house before they have sold their home, particularly in this economy?
Well, you hit it. It is consumer confidence. But that consumer confidence is backed by real numbers. Job growth is up. People feel confident in their jobs. They have a solid job. The other is mortgage rates. Mortgage rates are still at a near all-time low. They feel very comfortable with that. And then the bottom line is they can sell their home.
You were saying, Pat Riley, just before we started, that tomorrow will never be as good as today. I'm paraphrasing what you said.
It's interesting. I was chairman of the chamber, and I was in total denial that the Charlotte region was going to participate in the downslide. And we were about a year and a half behind the rest of the economy, and we went in hard. And the good news is we're coming out as fast as we went in, and we're coming out early. We're doing much better than my friends around the country. And I think it's brought to you by what we're talking about. We have all kinds of positive energy of job creation, companies coming here, retirees are coming here in droves. Parents or grandparents are following their kids here and grandkids, and it's stable. Kids are coming here without jobs because they want to live in the Charlotte region, and they'll stay here till they find a job rather than go to a city that they wouldn't.
And is that foolish? I mean, you're looking, Mark, at that job growth, et cetera, and we've talked with other economists about how the jobs that were here prior to the recession are never coming back, and we're still trailing the rest of the country on job recovery. So is it foolish to come here anticipating getting a job? Maybe you won't get one.
Well, a lot of it is quality of life, but at the same time, job growth has picked up in the last year. We've had very strong job growth in Charlotte. Job growth has been about twice as strong as it's been nationally. We're going to add 30,000 net new jobs, and the quality's improved. We've seen a big pickup in the financial sector, which is still very important. It makes up somewhere between 20 and 25% of the employment base here. And it's much stronger today than it was a year ago. And income growth has picked up. The unemployment rate's come down. And that decline in the unemployment rate is really important. I mean, consumer confidence bounces all over the place. And a lot of times it's responding to something that's in the headlines. But the decline in the unemployment rate really, really hits home. When the unemployment rate comes down, people that have jobs feel more comfortable about their own financial position, and they're more willing to either form a household or buy a new home and trade up to a more expensive or a better location. And that's what we're beginning to see happen in the market today.
We're also seeing about 8.2 million Americans' home are upside down, less than 10%. So what you're seeing with the appreciation now, every day, every week, every month, we have more people that are eligible to come out from underneath the home that they're currently living in order to downsize or upgrade. So you have that pent-up demand that's also fueling the underbelly.
Let's underline that, because a lot of people were hurt. They didn't lose their homes, but they lost a lot of equity in their homes, and they owed more on the house than the house became worth in the recession. So what you're saying is that as housing prices begin to tick up, they're getting back that lost equity, and now they can move on because they're not upside down.
Yes, American home ownership, I think, got up to 74% from the historic low since World War II of about 62. And so there will be folks that will not be able to buy in the future, and probably shouldn't. They, you know, to own a home but not be able to fix the roof or not be able to fix the furnace. So we got kind of overzealous. Both sides of the aisle in Washington said home ownership is good, and we drove it off the track. So we're getting back to a 62% ownership, so those folks can't buy. And then we have a lot of folks that are still cleaning up credit, but in more cases, they're paying their bills, and they're just upside down. They got into a new home, and they did put a little money down, if any, and the owner paid the builder paid the closing costs, and all of a sudden the house depreciates 10, 15, 20%. They're upside down. They're paying their bills. They have good credit, but they're tied.
You're talking about, Mark, job recovery and what that's doing to help the economy at large, and, of course, buying and selling houses in general. But we went from a peak of, I think, 22,000 single-family homes started in 2006 to 4,700 homes started in 2009 when this all began. That's an 80% drop in 3 years. What did that have? What kind of impact did that have on jobs and the availability of jobs? Because the home building industry was decimated.
And in each housing start generates, on average, about three jobs. So right there, you're looking at a loss of, I don't know, I'd say probably lost 40,000 jobs in construction. And a lot of those folks are transient. They don't necessarily stay in the market. And so a lot of them left the market, or they're working in other types of jobs.
Those are the actual people who are hammering the nails and installing the wiring and things like that.
And that's created a bit of a problem, because as hard as this is to believe, builders are having a hard time finding workers. And contractors are having a tough time finding workers. And it's been a limiting factor, even in some of the hardest hit housing markets of the country, like Florida and Arizona. They have shortages of construction workers.
Don't talk about that.
Great point. You think about Charlotte and that 4,700 starts that hit the bottom. The last 12 months are now up to about 9,000 starts. Go the reverse. That's an additional almost 13,000 jobs that have been created in Charlotte in the new home building industry. Now, the public doesn't see that, because they look at large companies that relocate here and they build a corporate headquarters in Ballantyne or up in the university area, and you drive by that parking lot and you see all those cars. Those are jobs. Mm-hmm. If you're up in the Detroit area and you go by an auto manufacturing, they're a manufacturer. You go by the plant, you see cars, you see jobs. Right now, today, when I woke up, individually within our company, we have 35 factories underway, because our factories are out in the field. Each factory has six or seven guys showing up today.
By factory, you mean home.
A home. Yeah. Exactly. That home is not being built in a factory with cars surrounding it. So as Mark said, that's 13,000 new jobs that the housing market has created right here in Charlotte, and they're scattered all throughout Charlotte. The public doesn't see it, so you'd miss that number. But common sense tells you, look at what's going on with the housing side. Huge job creation.
You're the vice president of the Home Builders Association. How bad is the shortage of workers? Because I know that at the height of this, we couldn't build houses fast enough.
Absolutely.
And most of them were being built by people not from around here. Let's be polite.
Well, that is true. And at the same time, when you go out and look at those workforces today, There are a lot of folks from many different countries that were not here originally that have built true businesses. These are true craftsmen. They have created jobs within their own company. They have skills that no one else has. And when they left, it hurt the housing industry as a whole.
So how difficult is it for home builders to find people?
It's more difficult today than it has been.
Does that mean that the prices they have to pay people have risen? Does it mean the price of the home has to go up to compensate? What does it mean?
A little bit of both. Fortunately, we've not seen huge price escalations on the cost side, yet we've seen them. Every builder in town is seeing cost increases.
Is the need for people to actually – construction workers, is the need for that being ameliorated somewhat by the fact that the market is not on fire yet?
Yes and no. For anyone that's in the industry right now, it feels like it's on fire simply because there's not as many of us out there, whether it's the construction worker themselves, the home builder as a company. It is very busy if you're good and in the business.
I would think that home builders lost a lot of people in the back office, not just the people in the field building the houses, but people who plan for all this and coordinate, the managers of the companies. And I don't even know the positions, but there are hundreds of people who work behind the scenes. Are those people coming back? Are they available to come back?
It's an interesting thing about home building. It gets in your blood, and you either love it, and it's a passion, and it's the industry you want to be in, or during this downturn, you did find something else. And to your point, you are correct. There's some that found other things and are not coming back. There's a lot of folks, though, you have to kick them out of the room to have them stop. It's just so passionate within them. So it is more difficult to find folks to come back in those mid-manager positions or other positions within the industry that you need the assistance for. It's a challenge.
So home prices have been on the rise in Charlotte. How do we compare to other parts of the state, other parts of the country? And you have a real estate company that I think deals with almost the entire state of North Carolina, probably most of much of South Carolina.
We go from Raleigh to Greenville, South Carolina, and the economies that are in our footprint kind of mirror the economy when we went into the recession. If you look at the Raleigh and Charlotte and Greenville marketplaces, they're all the envy of the rest of the country. They're all vibrant in growth. The Greensboro Triad market, it's more of a service industry serving each other. It never went up real high, and prices never went down real low. So it's been stable. But to the Raleighs and the Charlottes and the Greenville, South Carolinas, we did see tremendous price increases, and we also saw a lot of deflation, but those three markets are coming back the strongest.
Why are prices going up? Why aren't they just steady?
When I said to you nothing's going to be better tomorrow than today, is interest rates are – it's a time ticking. Interest rates are going up. At every time in history, interest rates hit a trough. They went up 2 points, and we're on our way up to 2 points. It's being artificially held back. You can see when the government purchased the securities, they went down a little bit. But it's on a two – It's on a time tick up 2 points. You have prices going up, so and you have supply, as you heard, an 8-year low on resale and a 45-year low on new home. You put those things together, that supply demand is driving prices up. So the medicine that's curing this is lack of inventory, low interest rates, and pent-up demand. People want that new home. People want to move up or down or over. So nothing's going to be better tomorrow. Whatever I want tomorrow is going to cost more than today.
When we come back, I want to talk about interest rates and how long they may be as low as they are today with Mark Vintner and also Pat Riley and Bill Saint. Stay with us. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and PNC Wealth Management, with over 160 years of experience and a team of financial professionals committed to helping clients achieve their financial goals. More from Jennifer Green at 704-686-2129. And the 20th Annual Carolina Renaissance Festival, an artisan marketplace with feasting, jousting, and entertainment for all ages, Saturdays and Sundays, 10 to 5:30, now through November 24th. RenFestInfo.com. Well, it seems that the Affordable Care Act needs some affordable care. The rollout has been nothing short of a disaster, and the clock is ticking toward implementation. Yet despite what the president promised, there are some who like their current insurance who are about to lose it. We look at what needs to be done, at the progress being made at the website, and at the reality of Obamacare in North Carolina, which has only two major insurance companies tied to particular hospital systems tomorrow.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, a new court program offers a way to keep troubled veterans out of jail and get them the help they need for drug abuse and other addictions. How veterans' treatment courts are making a difference in the lives of returning soldiers.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the Charlotte real estate market, the Charlotte regional real estate market. That includes North and South Carolina, at least in our listening area, with Mark Vittner, who's a senior economist at Wells Fargo. Pat Riley is the president and COO of Allen Tate Realtors, and Bill Saint is the vice president of the Home Builders Association of Charlotte, also president of Classica Homes. Interest rates. Let's talk about that for just a second before I take a phone call. They've been at all-time lows for several years. I think, last year they were at 3-something, and now they're, I think, around 4.2 for a 30-year fixed loan. Those in the business say that translates into real buying power. So what does that mean, Mark?
Well, it means more people can afford to buy a home today, and they can afford to buy more home or more expensive home, a better located home. And really, you can you really don't have to think that hard about it. A mortgage rate with close to 4% is really a no-brainer. I mean, that's you get a mortgage like that. You're not going to have to think about refining at any time.
It actually changes the price point that you can afford to buy, right? Because it seems to me that I read that for every 1% in mortgage interest increase, the payment goes up 12%.
That's a great point, Mike. So many people don't realize that the real factor that drives the price of your home, or the cost, because the cost of your home is your payment, the real factor that drives that is the mortgage rate. And you're exactly right. If mortgages were to go up the 2% where they were back in 2008, around that 6% level, suddenly that same home that's priced today for $350,000, if you bought it again at $350,000, your payment has gone up 24-25%.
Now, about a year ago, you and I were having a conversation away from this program,
right,
about buying houses. And you said, because this is before the recovery really had begun in the housing market, boy, right, if you can buy a house, if you can get a loan and you can buy a house, you do it today, because you're trading in all the potential problems and real problems that you know about in your existing home for something brand new that's underpriced with an interest rate that is historically low. You should do it today. Of course, I didn't. Is that still true?
You're too busy here.
Is that still true? Is that still true?
It absolutely is. The you know, home prices, when you think about it, in Charlotte have risen, according to Metro Study, Case-Shiller Index, somewhere around 8%. That mortgage market goes up 1%, suddenly your payment's up 12%. Right. For whatever reason, I think the home building industry is the last to the table to understand you don't buy a home for $350,000, you buy it for $1,200 a month. When we look at car prices, you open up the Saturday paper, every car is priced what it is per month, $299 a month, $399 a month. When it comes to homes, we give you the price. The price doesn't mean anything unless you're coming in with a wheelbarrow of cash. Mm-hmm. So that interest rate is really driving incredible affordability.
So Bill Saint is a home builder, and he has a dog in the fight. So Mark Vittner, you don't have a dog in the fight. Is he right, or is he being jingoistic, or a booster?
He's right. And that I can tell you real simply how you can tell whether you've got a bargain interest rate or not. Mm-hmm. Long-term interest rates, the 10-year treasury is what sets mortgage rates. The 10-year treasury over time equals real GDP growth, which is around 2.5%. Plus inflation, which is around 2%, which takes you to 4.5%. And on average, the mortgage rate is 1.5 percentage points higher than that. That's 6. So if we're below 6%, and we're way below 6% like we are right now, that's something that rarely happens. So this is an incredible time to take advantage of low interest rates. They were lower, but the economy was in worse shape. As the economy gets in better shape, rates are going to get closer and closer to 6%.
And let's talk about that. How likely are they to rise, and how quickly might they rise?
Well, if you look at the forecast, you look at our forecast and anybody else's forecast, we have this gradual improvement in 2014 and 2015. And it's probably late 2015, 2016 before we're going to get mortgage rates over 5%. But in the past, the economy hasn't worked that way. It doesn't go to plan. And suddenly you realize that things are improving a whole lot faster than they are, and the Fed's playing catch-up, and rates seem to go up a whole lot faster than people would have thought. And that's the risk that you carry by waiting.
What's the impact of interest rates on home sales? Obviously, if they go up, it changes the amount of home you can buy, the price of the home you can buy. But does it also change the number of people who are actively buying?
It's the food chain. The first home buyer buying the second home and upgrading or downgrading as the baby boomers push through. So it's the food chain. And two things affect the food chain more than anything. One is interest rates. They always have. When the federal government, four out of the last five recessions are only caused because we raised interest rates to cool down the economy. And home buying is hit first, and then auto second because they're big home purchases. So we know for a fact, based on the cost that these guys just shared, it does take more people out of the marketplace, the affordability-wise. The second thing that's impacting us that we never had before is that we have a generation now coming along that is not buying their first home until maybe they're 28, 30, 32, 35. Most baby boomers had their second home before they were 30 and had kids by 30. Today they're waiting until later to get married, later to settle down, and later to purchase. I think the desire for home ownership is there. It's just delayed because they're coming out in a tough job market, a lot of college debt, and they want to go and live where they want to live. They'll go to the city without a job and wait for one. And that whole generation is gone. I mean, that's 10 years of home buying in the food chain that is lost. And we've never had that dynamic before, but we're working our way through that. At the same time, we're working our way through a recession.
I think the interesting part about that also, Pat, you look at where they are renting. These aren't the kids we were when we came out of college renting the apartment for $500, $600 a month. These are incredible apartments, but they are at incredible prices. Someone's paying $1,800, $2,200 a month.
Yes, can you explain that to me?
Makes me shake my head and say,
Can you explain
it to me? I can't. I really can't. Other than, A, you walk in and you don't have to have a down payment. Now,
but you've got to have the first and last month's rent.
You
that's
do
a
have
lot
to have
of money
that.
Down.
That's something. And you're paying more per month to rent that apartment than you are to buy a home.
But I think people want flexibility. The recession was so severe, and young people they've got a lot of fixed costs. And so many of them are carrying around the equivalent of a mortgage in their student loan debt. And they're not sure that whatever job they're working now is going to work out for them. So they want that flexibility. They don't know where they want to live. And this is a big change for us. Household formations, the rate of new households are formed in the United States is less than half of what it's normally been. So first-time home buyers have largely been missing in action in this recovery.
And that's also changing the character of the kind of home that these younger people are looking for, is it not?
It does. You know, you think about the apartment complexes and what the amenities and the resort style it feels like. They're looking for that same thing in a home now. Mm-hmm. Home design is completely different than what it was 10 years ago, and it's addressed that need.
There's no living rooms. There's a lot of outdoor entertainment, that fireplace
exactly.
or that
fire pit. Dining room's gone away. It's exciting. Yes.
Well, what does that mean for all those of us who own homes? Own homes who have living rooms.
That'll be another show about renovations.
Seriously. I mean, there's a whole bunch of housing stock out there that does not meet what people want in a new home because there's a whole right-sizing thing that's going on. In the pre-recession time, everybody wanted a McMansion. They wanted these enormous houses with vaulted ceilings and Palladian windows and two-story living rooms and
indoor theaters.
Indoor theaters, and now they don't.
They don't. It's changed. The real, I think, return has been back to real values. They want timeless design. They want something that won't look like it was built 10 years ago. When they look at their home 15 years from now, they want it to be in style. So
what does that mean?
Timeless.
A Cape Cod?
It could be anything. Traditional architecture. It might be a European classic. It might be Mediterranean. It might be American. It might be Cape Cod.
But something that's rooted. But these young people who are living in $1,800 a month luxury apartments, these luxury apartments don't look traditional. The ones going up through South End and the ones downtown, they're not traditional at all.
That's the exciting part. They're traditional on the outside. They're timeless on the outside. But when you walk in, just as Pat was saying, that's where it gets exciting.
And that's what you're doing with home building now?
Absolutely.
It's timeless on the outside. Inside, it's hip and happening?
It's hip. It's exciting. You walk in and you do feel that wide open space. Perfect example is touring through the Homerama houses this year. Walk in, wide open, and you're looking at kitchen, great room, outdoor living, covered, the ability to have fireplaces outside that feel like you have a complete extra room. You feel like you're, I had a lady last night walking through Homerama saying, this is better than a resort.
Hmm. Well, from a home builder's point of view, let's just have a moment of honesty here.
Yes.
If you're not going to build a formal living room and a formal dining room and then a family room, if you're just going to build this enormous family room that's attached to the kitchen and open to the kitchen, actually,
right?
It's less work for you, isn't it?
That's a great question. It's actually more challenging today than it's ever been because it does come down to great design. We literally tour probably 10 different states every year finding where the best designs are because it's easy to build a 4,000-square-foot box or a 2,000-square-foot box. But how do you make it exciting?
Let me ask you another question because a lot of the people who want these, I would think, are younger people, right? And they're coming from apartments that have the same typical kind of design. And they don't have kids yet or they have a very small family or the kids are very small. They're moving to these beautiful new homes that have these big open designs. Aren't they going to find when the kid's 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old that there's no place to hide? You can't get away from – there's no place to put these kids. They're in your midst all the time.
Actually, no. Look at – it's not just young. Look at the folks that are buying in the number one selling community in Charlotte right now, Sun City. That's a completely different demographic.
That's a Del Webb community.
Del Webb community.
For retirees or absolutely. For older active Americans.
Right. Walk through those homes. That's not the retiree home of 25 years ago.
So, Mark, what does this mean? We have all this housing stock that doesn't meet these qualifications. So if you bought a McMansion in 2003, are you out of luck?
Well, there's a lot of focus on the exciting segments of the housing market, so we're always focusing on what the young people are doing. But there's a huge trade-up market. There's a lot of things going on in the market. The young market has actually been growing relatively slowly. There are parts of it that are doing very, very well. The trade-up market's a whole lot bigger, and it too has been coming back slowly. That's why we're still at relatively low levels. But there's a lot of pent-up demand. The other things that are going on in demographics is that home ownership among African Americans and among Latinos is way below what it is for the economy overall. And we're seeing the largest gains in home ownership in those two demographics. So there's a whole lot more happening than just young people buying the trendiest homes. I mean, that's the exciting part, and certainly it's a profitable part for home builders. But there's a whole lot more to the housing market than that.
WSOC-TV recently reported that banks like Wells Fargo and Bank of America have announced new loan structures that will allow a buyer to purchase a home with as little as 5% down. Is that true?
You know, I'm not as familiar with all of the mortgage programs. There's so many that are out there, and a lot of programs are aimed at particular market segments, and they may be part of boosting efforts to boost home ownership among certain segments of the population that are guided by all sorts of different stipulations.
Well, the reason I ask is it sounds very much like what was going on before the recession, where you didn't – no money down, no proof of ability to pay, just buy the house.
No.
I can tell you that's not there because the mortgage rules are so much more stringent in terms of providing income verifications. Mm-hmm. I would still say that qualifying for a mortgage is tougher today than it has been on average over the last 40 years. So we haven't swung anywhere near
But go ahead, Pat.
You're talking about down payment. The qualifications of paying back that loan have never been tougher, and I've been at this 44 years, and it's going to get tougher January 11th. You're going to fit inside this box, and if you don't fit inside this box,
what's happening on January 11th?
There'll be the final rollout of mortgage qualifications. It's going to be about 42-44% of your income cannot be greater than that in order to afford a home. So when they're helping with down payment, they're saying, Mark, you have a good job. You can pay this back. We have taken you through the auto bell car wash to make sure for a fact you can afford it. You just don't have that 5% down. So we're not lowering the qualifications for affordability. What we're doing is letting the entry come in because I can pay that down payment back.
But wasn't one of the problems prior to the recession the fact that people got into homes with very low down payments? People who could actually afford these houses in some cases got in with very low down payments, and then the bottom fell out of the economy. Maybe they lost their jobs. They were upside down in the house. They could no longer afford to make the monthly payments, and they had very little equity in the house. So it was smart to just simply walk away.
Well, that was a problem in some instances, but in many of those cases, folks got into it with no money down, and they had some sort of a mortgage that allowed them to carry it for a short period of time. So people would buy a $1 million home mm-hmm. with very little equity, thinking, hey, if I can hold on to it for 1 year and sleep in a sleeping bag in this $1 million home and then flip it a year from now and it goes up 10%, I make $100,000.
Right.
And you had a lot of people trying that game or buying 20 homes for $160,000 and trying to flip them.
So if you want to buy a house – and you're on the margins, you need to do it before January 14th is what I'm hearing you say.
The margins won't get you in. I think you said it. There used to be that feeling that you could walk in and just get a mortgage with your signature. If you've gone through a refi or you've purchased in the last 2 years, that is completely different. The amount of paperwork, the amount of due diligence is phenomenal. Yet, if you're solid, you have good credit, you have a good job, you have the ability to repay, you're going to get a mortgage. The difference is today you're going to prove it 14 different ways and have a stack of paperwork that thick and feel like it was painful, but you're in the right loan. It's solid. The whole reason and whole thing that's going on here is back to common sense. The banking industry realizes this is back. The markets realize it's strong, and they do the due diligence to make sure it's a secure loan.
They're only going to allow so much of your income to go toward a home.
Exactly.
Period.
Okay. Let's take a phone call. John's been holding on for quite a while. John, welcome.
Thank you, Mike. I wanted to see what your guests thought about the article in the Observer yesterday showing that three essential hedge funds had bought 2,200 homes in the Charlotte area and how that sort of factors in that this seems to be a very new phenomenon that kind of investment is being made in that range of homes.
Yep. The paper reported yesterday that over the summer, one in every five Charlotte area homes sold was bought by an investment group. That's 20%. What impact has that had on the real estate market and real estate values?
What attracted those investors is that we saw that prices overshot to the downside. And so the investors saw value there. And this is a new asset class where investors, and they're not necessarily hedge funds, they're private equity firms, but they're institutional investors is the way to refer to them. And they're buying homes with the idea that they're going to rent them, and that's their business plan. Their belief is that it's going to be tougher for a larger segment of our population to qualify for a mortgage for the indefinite future, and that they're going to want to rent.
And did real estate agents and companies know that these were investors buying to make these rental properties?
Oh, absolutely. And they were looking for homes, 250 brick, not distressed properties. They wanted to be able to move the tenant right in and take advantage of this appreciation cycle coming.
We have to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk some more about that phenomenon and what it means going forward for people in the neighborhoods that they bought all these houses and what it does to real estate values, what it does to rental prices and more. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and James McElroy and Deal for over a half century, providing legal services and counsel to individuals and businesses, jmdlaw.com. And Blumenthal Performing Arts presents Jim Brickman, The Love Tour, award-winning pianist and recording artist, dazzling solo piano, and star-studded vocal collaborations, November 19th at Knight Theater, tickets at blumenthalarts.org. A new court program offers a way to keep troubled veterans out of jail and get them to the help that they need for drug abuse and other addictions, how veterans treatment courts are making a difference in the lives of returning soldiers, the topic of the conversation in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on The Diane Rehm Show. Perhaps you have questions about real estate, buying, selling, getting a loan, or more. WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks will get you to us. Stay with us.
Arts and cultural groups in Charlotte depend on community support, but convincing the public to contribute financially is often an uphill battle.
It's not that we don't think the arts is important. We do think it's important. But I think all these other things are more in your face.
Join WFAE for a public conversation to explore how the Charlotte area's cultural organizations hope to build a stronger future. Tuesday evening at Spirit Square. Details and RSVP at WFAE.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking to Mark Vittner, Senior Economist with Wells Fargo, Pat Riley, President and COO of Allen Tate Realty, and Bill Saint, Vice President of the Home Builders Association of Charlotte and President and CEO of Classica Homes. The question came in just a moment ago about the fact that there was a story in the paper over the weekend that there have been investors coming in. One in every five houses sold in over the summer was by an investment group to turn them into rental properties. What does that do to other houses in those neighborhoods where there are suddenly incredible numbers of rental properties?
Well, a lot of these houses were rental properties beforehand that they bought because they were buying homes. A lot of homes they bought were distressed. And the reason they were attracted to them was the prices had overshot to the downside. They've actually done some good for the market in that it helped establish prices for these homes. It helped stabilize prices. It helped appraisals normalize. It made borrowing for a home in those neighborhoods possible again. So there's been some good. The question is how well will they keep these homes up? And these large institutions have a plan where they're going to send people into the homes three times a year on average to make sure that they change the air conditioner filters, to make sure the place is being kept up, make sure nobody's got a meth lab in there or whatever else. I mean, there are a lot of risk in owning rental property, and they think they have it figured out. I'm not so sure. I mean, there's a lot of risk in it, but I think there's also been some positives that people have overlooked.
So we've already have an inventory problem. If 20% of the homes sold over the summer were being sold to investment people to turn into rental properties, doesn't that severely impact inventory of available homes for sale? And doesn't that then drive the market prices up?
Exactly. So to Mark's point, it has helped expedite the recovery because it took inventory off the market and it established prices for appraisals. The problem we had in this recovery is the appraisals lag. So I need good comps in a neighborhood, and I have to use the comps in the neighborhood. So if I didn't have good comps, except for the distressed properties, when a buyer and seller came together and agreed, which is fair market value, they both agreed, we didn't have the comps to support it. With these guys coming in, at least they had a baseline of good pricing so that we could sell properties again.
But now these are investment organizations, and sometimes investors buy and sometimes they sell. And when they sell, won't they have a habit of selling lock, stock, and barrel? They're going to dump 150 homes on the market in 1 month.
I don't think that's likely. Most likely what they will do when it comes time to sell, they'll either form a publicly traded REIT so that they basically sell it on Wall Street.
And then, REIT, R-E-I-T.
Real Estate Investment Trust. And so individuals would buy shares in the company and they would receive dividends off of the income from the properties. Or they would sell the houses en masse to another investor who may roll it up into some other type of investment. So I don't think they're going to sell the houses. I don't think it's very likely that they're going to dump the houses back on the market. That doesn't seem – that would make the least amount of sense for them.
And I can speak for the markets that we have witnessed. These homes are not in any one neighborhood. They are spread throughout. So it's not like one neighborhood all of a sudden would
– Okay. You mentioned off the air that this is the market in Charlotte for this kind of purchase has pretty much dried up, and so now people have moved on, investors have moved on to Raleigh. What makes Charlotte and Raleigh or North Carolina so attractive to investors for this kind of activity?
There's a lot of positive buzz on Charlotte and Raleigh throughout the country. I mean, we're seen as up-and-coming cities, and we are up-and-coming cities. You have a lot of new industry that's moving here. You have a lot of population growth. And so an investor, when they're looking at buying a property, the really savvy ones are looking for neighborhoods that they think are going to be up and coming, that have bright turnaround prospects. And so they're hoping that they're going to make money off the rents and make money off of price appreciation. And that would be a home run. I think if they do either, they'll probably come out very well.
And when they come into these properties, are they remodeling these properties or are they just renting them as is?
They're coming in and they're putting new carpet in and neutralizing them and cleaning them up and moving a tenant as fast as they possibly can. Okay. So it is improving the property on the inside.
A question from a listener: if now is a good time to buy, is it also a good time to borrow money to renovate an existing home?
Yes, it is. When prices were falling, a lot of people would not renovate their home. They said, "Why do I want to put more money into a house and the value is going down?" People will talk themselves into spending money on a kitchen or bathroom upgrade or just a general upgrade of the house, thinking, "Well, I'm going to get some of that back in resale. It's going to boost the value of the house." And upgrades do, but you need to have a rising price environment to make that math work. I remember when flat panel TVs worked. I persuaded my wife. I said, "Well, you know, given the square footage cost of the house, we got to get a flat panel TV. It's going to free up that many square feet."
Is it worth doing it? If you're going to put your house on the market in this market, and you look at your kitchen and you see, well, you know, I could use granite, or I really could resurface these cabinets, or I have a bathroom that it's seen better days. It's like 1990s, and should you in this market as a seller go in and put these improvements in your house to sell the house, or should you just simply sell it as is and let the new owner price that into the price? Let the new owner do their thing.
I spoke to a wonderful audience of folks thinking about moving into a continuous care facility the other week, and they were waiting till their properties got back to the 2006 levels. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know your health now, and you know what the cost is to get into these places right now. The fact is, you do have to prepare your home to sell. It has to be decluttered. It has to be neutralized. The Justin Bieber posters have to come down for certain families. For others, you just have to take all that Hummel collection and pack it up, even if the kids don't want it. The reality is, today's market out there, granite is in. Even your $100,000 homes have granite. So if you don't have granite, your kitchens and baths have the biggest pop, and that's what people look at the most, along with outdoor living now. So if I'm going to spend money, I'm going to
spend money on granite, and you like something pink in the bathroom, some pink granite, and everybody's looking at it going, ugh. I'm not doing that.
No, you're going to pick a neutral. We're going to help you pick a neutral granite. And, yes, you will get your money back. Your home will sell faster and at a better price. You will get your money back for those type of improvements. As far as the roof, they expect a roof that doesn't leak. They expect a furnace that works. So if you're going to spend money, it needs to be to neutralize, declutter, and to spend money on the kitchens and baths.
And since you're building these newfangled houses that everybody wants because they're what's happening now, as they say, what would you say to people who are remodeling their home to sell their home to buy another home? What would you, if they can do things like what you're talking
about?
Just
like
Pat
said, absolutely. There's great remodelers here in Charlotte, super organizations that will help you both from the design standpoint and a cost standpoint to help you put the right things.
But if you can remodel it and make it all spiffy and new, why move?
There's still a desire. New might be a little bit more attractive. That might be something they want. Might be a location they want to move to.
Le Christian on Facebook says, as a millennial, I'm looking for new homes that are hip but more urban, like brownstone or townhomes close to city transit. Are there any builders in Charlotte that offer a brownstone or townhomes for first-time home buyers? And we've stumped the panel.
We've got some for sale in my neighborhood, which is right there on 10th Street. So there's some.
And you will see more and more of that coming out of the recession. You're going to see more. People do want to live close to transit. They do want to live close to amenities. They want to be able to walk. And we just saw one piece of the rental market on the south end. That rental market will ultimately, those condos could turn into condos, those rentals. And as we build new product, she is addressing where we're going to go. Right now, it's just nobody was building. Nobody wanted to make a mistake. Nobody wanted to buy something and have the price go down. So the new home market as well as the resale market, I didn't want to make a mistake, so nobody did anything. The only people selling during those 4 years were people who had to sell. The rest were sitting in the bleachers watching.
Foreclosures. There were lots of foreclosures in the market at one point. Are they all gone now? And were they? If they're there now, are you wise to get involved in that as a home buyer, or is that something that's really kind of complicated? complicated.
There aren't as many there. And I think a lot of people that wanted to buy foreclosures were frustrated because that's where the institutional investors came in and bought up the homes. And they typically paid cash so that if you went to buy a foreclosure and you wanted to get a mortgage, you were at a big disadvantage. And right now foreclosures are a relatively small part of the Charlotte market. And a lot of what's left, it's sort of like going Christmas shopping the day before Christmas. Everything's picked over. Mm-hmm. Best stuff's gone. And there's not much there.
I'm a little confused about something because at some point in our conversation, Pat, you said that it's a buyer's market at the moment, that they're going to be very picky. But one expert says that too few new homes are being built nationwide to keep up with the demand from buyers. The result is a 13-year low in the supply of existing U.S. homes for sale and a 50-year low for newly built homes.
Good question.
If so you are a builder, seller's market?
if you're a builder today and you build a quality home, that home will be sold at foundation stage. There is such a pent-up demand for new construction. It was just not there for four and a half years. You could still buy a resale home, but when you're talking about 26,000 permits down to 750, could you imagine 4 years if there was no new cars? Could you imagine the pent-up demand just in the marketplace if you couldn't buy a new car? So now all of a sudden you can buy a new car, but there's only so many builders because it's thinned out. There's only so many lots that are shovel-ready.
But why isn't that a seller's market?
For a builder, it might be.
Okay. For new construction.
Well, it might be, but it still does go back to that ability to produce it. If we think of those 20,000-plus permits as scaling Mount Everest, and believe me, as the builders out there, getting to the peak of Mount Everest and 20,000 permits again is probably, the air is too thin and it will not happen. But getting there is four base camps. We're not even at base camp two with 10,000 permits a year. We're not even halfway back. We shouldn't be at the top, but there's still that ability is just what's getting produced is not what's in demand.
And are you not getting permits because you don't have the personnel to build the houses fast enough, or because there's not enough buyers in the market to buy them, or because there's not enough
what's driving
money?
It? Good question. Number one factor is land positions. We just talked a moment ago about where could you go to build those brownstones. There's not a piece of land that I can think of that I could rush out and buy as a new home builder in the market, in a neighborhood.
Well, why build in a neighborhood? There's a lot of infill opportunities. There's a lot of downtown real estate that's surface parking lots. Why are home builders reluctant to do that? Home builders like to go in and they like to build neighborhoods. Why not do a really wonderful house in an existing neighborhood or look at that parking lot across the street?
Right, right. The entitlement process, what that means is buying raw land, mm-hmm. Getting it zoned to do what you'd like to do, putting in the infrastructure. That process is so cumbersome and so difficult and so time-constraining. To do it for five lots, seven lots is just as much work as doing 25 or even 250 for some of the larger builders.
So we have an inventory. We have an inventory problem because builders aren't building fast enough for the demand at the moment. What about people who own existing homes? Why are they reluctant to put them on the market? Because there's no place to go and they do?
I think some of it is that folks are thinking that prices are going to get back to where they used to be. They're holding out for a price that's just
– to get what my neighbor got.
Yeah, they want to get what the peak was, and they think that things are going to get a whole lot better. This market is a little confounding in that it's thin. I had mentioned this before. There are relatively few buyers and sellers in the market, and so we have a lot of price volatility. And you're going to hear a lot of stories about things that sold at pretty high prices and things that were bargains, just because it's relatively thin. As more and more buyers come back to the market, builders will be able to build up more inventory. Mm-hmm. The limiting factor in building new homes is, it's one, it's land. But there is land right now. I mean, they will use it up fairly quickly. But but it's also financing. Builders can't go out there and build a lot of inventory ahead of demand. And so we have to sales and construction have to rise together.
At what price point? What price points seem to be selling more quickly than others?
The average price point is 333, and that's probably the softest spot in the market. That's where, when you say that 50% of Americans can only afford 375 and under, and then 21% from from 350 to 500 and 14%. It's a pyramid. So the soft spot will and always will be 300 and under.
How close to asking price are most sellers getting?
Right now, we're within 10% on an average from the toughest counties to the counties that are the most rambunctious. So I'd say 10%.
And as a buyer, what should you feel comfortable with in terms of your haggling range?
Right now, it depends on the property. We have properties that are having three contracts the day it's listed. It's location, it's price, it's condition. And if it's priced right and conditioned right today, it will move very quickly.
Homerama opened over the weekend. This is an annual event, although I think it went dormant during the recession. But Homerama opened this weekend. What kind of turnout did you have?
It was unbelievable. Far exceeded what we had hoped for or had expected. Opening night was Friday night, which is kind of an industry event. Over 250 people came. Saturday was nearly 900 plus. Sunday was 800 plus.
And what does that tell you?
It is absolutely, people are excited about housing. They want to look at what's new. They want to see what's fresh, and they want to look and think about buying that next new home.
And the houses there are taking advantage of these new designs?
They absolutely are. They in incredible housing. It's five independent builders, six homes are on tour. They range from $550,000 to slightly over $900,000. It's homes that people can really enjoy and see themselves living in and love what they're looking at.
And your company, Classica Homes, is giving away a house to a veteran. It's Veterans Day. We have 30 seconds. Tell me quickly.
Most exciting thing we've done all year long, we got involved with a charity called Operation Finally Home, and building a house for a veteran sergeant and his family up in the Huntersville area. They'll move in before Christmas. We couldn't be more pleased. Had incredible support from our trade partners
and
to make this happen.
They'll be debt-free on the house.
They will be debt-free.
That's Bill Saint, Vice President of the Home Builders Association of Charlotte, Pat Riley with Alan Tate, Mark Fittner with Wells Fargo. Thank you for the